Da-na-da-na-da-na. This is where the intro music goes. Da-na-da-na.
But, and this butt is a big butt.
Ooh, I cannot lie.
Yeah, I like big butts. Yeah. That is a hot take, my friend. hot take. Num, 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 num. I'll eat that crow. Man, Cincy Steven's going to get that.
What's up, y'all? It's grade A time. A sad episode of grade A as the Orange and Blue suffer their first defeat of the season, a thorough beatdown at the hand of the Fighting Johnny Nelsons. I'm not happy because he had a stellar game. We're going to talk about that. But you know what? You can't win them all. I didn't think we were going to be the Invincibles of Arsenal. Still off to a good start and still honestly a lot to talk about in this game. Had a couple of fresh faces in there in terms of starters. Well, at least one, I guess, new that had to be done because of injury and sitting out as well. And, you know, a general shakeup and some things to talk about. A game that really, I think, if you had to watch it a second time, Adam Kuhn, I wonder what you come away from it saying. Was it unlucky? Were we that bad? I don't think the scoreline was really indicative. We certainly didn't handle the pressure well, but we certainly had some breaks go against us. But before we get into it all, how you doing, buddy?
You know, I'm doing all right. I like I said off recording. Like I did the breaks today, hoping that I could put off rewatching this game one more day, you know, but, you know, as I've gotten older in age, I've gotten better and better tools, and I was able to change the brakes in like an afternoon. And I was like, oh, well, crap. Now I got to watch the game.
There you go. That's what growing up gets you. Pain. Yep. Just, you know, closer to pain. But mm-hmm. You know what? It's over. It's done with. It's done and dusted. We're going to talk about it. We're going to move on from it. And we'll start with a guy that probably wants to forget all about it, and that's Roman Celentano. Had given up 4 goals on the year, gives up 5 in one game, albeit a couple off deflections and one off a freak, you know, bounce off the post and then off of his hand into the net. But yeah, rough night for Roman all around. When that happened, when the one off the post in his hand, there's that picture of him going around and just looking up. And, you know, sometimes it's just not your night. This was certainly not Roman's night. So give me your accounting of the performance for Roman Celentano.
You know, it's hard for me just to out and out blame Roman for a lot of the night. But, you know, when you give up 5 goals, it's hard to say a guy played great. So especially when one was an old own goal, as freaky as that own goal was. You know, he did have a couple of decent saves toward the end of the night, a double save on Klaus that was pretty good. And Stroud made it through early in the game in the 10th minute, almost made it 2-0 in the 10th minute on a breakaway. And he was able to get down on that. So that was good. But, you know, not much he could have done on that third minute goal to Stroud. It was a very good shot. Second goal, again, you mentioned it before, it was deflected on the way in. Haglund got a deflection on it. Not much he could do there. The third goal, a headed strike, very, very strong headed strike toward the top corner of the goal. Again, not much he could do there. Now, fourth goal was one where, you know, he might have been a little late to close down the angle on that. On the Giacchini goal. You know, so maybe a little bit of the blame there. And also the fifth goal, that own goal, you know, I feel like I have to deduct him a little bit for an own goal. But again,
he had his back turned and his hand up.
Right. It was like the opposite of a Scott Sterling stop. It was, you know, it bounced every which way and ended up going in. So, you know, hard to say Roman played. I really don't think he played that bad of a game. And an interesting fact was he wasn't tied for third. He was alone for third on the team with 2 shot creating actions. So that ought to tell you a little bit about how our offense was. So, yeah, you know, I feel like I have to blame him a little bit, but it's really hard to blame him because I really felt he was hung out to dry most of the night. I gave him a 4.0.
Yeah. Again, I think one that you just kind of, you know, you chalk it up. Sometimes the breaks go against you. And I think in this one, especially early with those deflected goals, and then obviously the sort of the cherry on top, the own goal at the end, it's just sometimes it's just not your night. Let's move into the back line. So we've talked at length about how strong defensively FC Cincinnati has been this year. It's kind of been our bell cow. And, you know, when you look across the back line, I'm going to say two out of the three guys I didn't think had bad games. And again, you contextualize it within what this scoreline ended up being. We'll start with Yerson Mosquera. I didn't think he played bad at all. I thought he had what I would consider to be a pretty normal Yerson game. There were certainly some instances where there were some passes that put us in harm's way. But for the most part, defensively, I thought, again, held his own, kind of, you know, put his stamp on this game. What did you see?
Yeah, I for the most part, I agree with what you just said. There is one thing I'll take an exception to, but we'll get to that in a bit.
That's why you have the mic, my friend.
That's right. I thought Yerson played a really good game. I thought he had a great block shot on Joachini right toward the beginning of the game. Also a good track back to stop a Joachini run. He drew yellow cards on both Ostrich and Stroud. He had 5 interceptions, which led the team. He had 4 of the team's 10 clearances, which obviously led the team. He had 11 recoveries, which led the team. He drew 6 fouls, which led the team. He was by far the highest percentage passer out of the back. He was in the mid-70s, but again, in typical fashion, he was fairly solid on his short and medium range passing. His long range passing left a little to be desired. But you know, in general, I thought he had a match that wasn't much worse than what he'd been putting in all our victories. So I gave him a 7.0, and he was actually my man of the match.
I don't blame you on that. And I should have prefaced it before I even threw it over to you, because I thought that it's odd you're going to give up 5 goals, but your man of the match is probably going to come from the back line, was sort of what I was thinking. And Yerson certainly would have been the guy that I would have tabbed for that. Again, I hate to keep belaboring it, but like some of these goals that they got, you know, again, and XG doesn't tell the whole story, but this game finished like basically 1.5 to 1.5. It really was not what the scoreline ended up being, but you know, at the end of the day, the scoreline is what counts, not advanced stats or stats and things like that. So anyway, Yerson with the man of the match. So let's move over to the middle. Matt Miazga, another one who I thought had a decent game. If I am going to be critical of Matt in any way, shape or form, this is one where his moxie or his emotion, I think, got the better of him at times. And I thought it, I don't want to say it took him off his game, but I felt like it took a little bit of the edge or the focus, or maybe, we'll just leave it as the edge or the focus, because I just don't think he was as clinical as he normally is defending. What about, what's your opinion on it?
Yeah, I definitely have some issues with Miazga's game. I do think, you know, this is the exact kind of thing that we would have criticized Lucho for 2 years ago.
Yes.
You know, he's wearing the captain's armband. When you, it's one thing if you lose your cool and the captain comes over and tells you to calm down. But when you are the captain, you have to be that voice of reason. You have to be the one, you know, kind of pulling guys away. And he was that sometimes, but other times he was the main guy. Kind
the
of
instigator.
Doing the instigation. And I kind of thought that that kind of spread to the team, especially toward the end of the first half and into the second half. You know, once they put it to bed, everybody calmed down a little bit and we started looking better. But when we lost our heads, it was like everybody lost their head. And I kind of felt like Miazga was one of the main problems with that. I also thought he flat out got beat over the top by Giacchini on his goal. And then when Klaus had his double shot where Roman made a double save on him, that again was because Miazga got beat over the top, just flat out beat in a foot race. You know, held him onside and couldn't get back to them and left them both in alone on goal. So that I felt like I had to dock him on. He did have four block shots, which led the team. He had a lot of good. He was in good position a lot, but he had a really nice back to the wall stop on Ostrich, where he was the last man and was able to stop him. But again, like one goal, I put squarely on his shoulders, and he was lucky he didn't give up a second one. I gave him a 4.5.
I think what you said about Lucho and the flack he would have caught in the past for his behavior is spot on in this instance for Miazga. There was not a calming presence, at least a vocally calming presence, out on the field for us. And look, let's be honest, like St. Louis, that crowd was charged. That team was charged. They play that high press. You know, you're getting grabbed, you're getting pushed, you're getting, you know, you're not getting these calls. A couple of breaks don't go your way. You can't unravel like that. You can't mentally let the game get away from you. And I thought that there was a lot of pouting and complaining, I guess, is the best way to put it. And
right.
For the guy that's wearing the armband, he needs to be the example. You can still play with an edge, but you've got to check that. And I think Noonan alluded to it after the game, if I'm correct. It's just, we lost that game mentally early, and we were never really able to recover from it. All right, let's move to the last defender, a guy that I think was checked out from the get-go. This was probably one of Hagelin's worst games, at least from where I was sitting watching it. He only played a half. I don't know if he was subbed off because of his performance or because Noonan wanted to make a tactical change. Could have been a combination of both, but I thought he was largely ineffective in the first half, probably a game that he's not going to look back fondly on. What did you see on the tape?
Yeah, I agree. He had one bright spot early. He had a really nice interception in the box. After that, though, a lot was made of Santi taking the wrong line on Johnny Nelson and getting beat by Johnny Nelson in the buildup to the Lovin shot. But I thought Hagelin was even worse on the buildup to that. He, you know, attempted to tackle Nelson and just took altogether the wrong line, kind of just ran past him, stumbled, got up, and then, you know, he's the guy that needs to track Lovin on the late run into the box, and he misses that too, ends up just getting the slightest of deflections on it, and it goes in. So, I mean, really, I felt that goal was really heavily on Hagelin. And also he doesn't pick up Hebert on his goal. And I thought the press really took him out of the game. He was only 12 of 22 passing for 54%. Most of those were not, you know, they were short passes that were getting intercepted. Mm-hmm. We couldn't get it out of our own end. Hagelin was a big cause of that. I just felt like him and Santi just looked out of sync. And I really think that two of the goals are squarely on his shoulders. I gave him a 2.0.
Woof. 2.0 in 45 minutes of work. But I agree with you. I thought that, you know, Nick's not the best player when he's put under pressure, especially heavy pressure without an easy out. And, you know, it was a microcosm of what we fear in him was on that first goal. He kind of takes bad angles, gets beat, stumbles around, tries to recover, lunges in, makes another bad play. You know, he just kind of compounds an error. If he makes one error, you know, he's going to compound it. If he's not on, there have been times where he's made errors and come back and actually blocked a shot or blocked a pass and kind of recovered for himself. But there's always these games, or occasionally, I won't say always, because Nick's been relatively solid for this team. So I'm not going to, you know, bury everybody for one result. But this is the game you fear from him, that he kind of compounds his own mistakes, albeit for only 45 minutes. So
right.
Let's move to the midfield. So this is our A-list midfield right now. I think going forward, these are the four you're going to see across at Barrial, Moreno, Obi, and Arias. So we'll start with Alvaro. This game was wide open, Adam. I I thought even at 2-0 down, I'm like, well, we're going to score. I just felt like we were going to get a foothold back into this game because of just the way it was playing. And I thought Alvaro, for the most part, was fairly effective throughout the entire match. Now, I'm sure you'll have some comments maybe defensively on him because, again, 5 went into the net. But I thought for the most part, you know, I'm not going to say it was a great Alvaro game, but I'm certainly not going to roast him. I thought he went out there and did what he was supposed to do. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. For the most part, I thought he was one of our better players. Now, I will say he had an obvious push that set up their first goal. It was a free kick. It was completely unnecessary. Just an absolute stupid foul.
Yep.
And that led directly to their first goal. And it was just like, I don't know. It was both obvious and
unnecessary
in equal parts and in a dangerous spot. So it was the three things that you really don't want in a foul. So
the trifecta of defending hell.
I mean, honestly, it probably cost him man of the match because it was so pivotal that was the shout that started the avalanche. I really knocked him on that, but I will say I thought most of the game he was actually pretty good. He had a really great over-the-top pass that was inch-perfect to Santos. Santos got a foot on it and volleyed it just wide. Had a really good cross to Santi Arias that he was able to volley on goal. Now, he kind of whiffed on it a bit, but again, it was a really nice pass from a tricky spot from Barrial there. He did give up a foul on Giacchini that led pretty much directly to the Hebert goal. So that wasn't great. It wasn't super direct, but again, it was reminiscent of the other one and just how unnecessary and dangerous it was. It was almost the exact same spot. He did have a decent shot on goal, and he did have 5 shot creating actions. Which again, that only one other player had 5. I'll let you try to figure out who that was, but, it was basically him, this other guy. And then, like I said, Celentano had 2. So, all of our offense, especially in the first half, was pretty much through Barrial. I think in general, his defense wasn't terrible. Most of our problems came on the right side of the field. I gave him a 6.5.
Yeah, had a solid game, but again, you can't ignore those 2 defensive errors. And again, sometimes those are going to cost you. More often than not, they don't. In this instance, it seemed like every little mistake we made was capitalized on. So we'll move to the middle. Junior Moreno, guy that's been on a string of good games. I thought Moreno had another solid game here. I didn't see anything glaringly bad out of him. Our midfield is always going to suffer or look disjointed without Lucho. And I'm just going to say without Lucho or someone like Kubo, somebody that is smooth receiving and turning with the ball. That's what allows us to transition and get out of pressure. When we are missing that, we tend to struggle, right? And in this case, we missed it and we definitely struggled. But overall, I thought Junior had a pretty solid game. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. With everything you said there, I thought it was a typical steady game for him, and the numbers kind of bear that out. I can't really fault him on a single goal or even goal scoring opportunity that they had. Generally speaking, a lot of their goal scoring opportunities were on the right side of the field again, and tended to have Obi and Arias and Haglund. We're kind of the guys holding the bag, and then Miazga in the second half, when Haglund came out and he shifted right. So, I thought Moreno was pretty solid. He had 12 progressive passes, which led the team. He was 85% passing, which other than Kimi Ordonez was pretty solidly our best. Like he definitely had a big number of passes and a fairly high percentage. You know, not as high as it has been, but still, he was our best player in terms of taking care of the ball. He had two interceptions. So yeah, I thought he was one of our better players. You know, unspectacular maybe. Certainly didn't do much. You know, in terms of our best chances offensively, but you know, I thought he did do a good job of easing the pressure when the pressure was on us. I gave him a 6.0.
Yep. Thing about Junior, he's going to be that steady presence. He's just not that steady voice. And I think that, again, you know, we talked about it a little bit with Miazga. It's really what we were lacking in this game is just somebody to calm us down. Let's move over to Obi. I thought he was up and down in this one. I thought there were some times where he was a tad bit reckless. There was a point in the beginning where I think there was a little bit of an injury concern. Looked like he twisted his knee up. I think that was like 5 minutes into the game, right after the goal, and you just felt like the wheels were falling off. Thought he was aggressive, but again, with the way that St. Louis was playing and pressuring us, it felt like he was chasing more often than not and really was not in good positions all the time to maybe be as effective as he normally is. Am I misreading that? What did you see?
Yeah, I agree with that. I thought that, you know, he was complaining a lot about a lot of fouls that honestly I thought were kind of fouls. yes, you know, he did get the ball first, but he was also kind of just going through the back of the guy, which you still really can't do, even if you get to the ball first. You know, I didn't think he was to the side enough on those. And so he got called, you know, I thought he really got caught up field on the Stroud break in the 10th minute where Stroud put it straight on Roman. But again, the break was on. He really put Santi Arias in a bad position there, basically a 2-on-1. You know, I thought the yellow was honestly kind of deserved. I thought he had a pretty horrible back pass that immediately put us in danger, but he did recover and make the interception on that. But was not nearly as ball secure. Like, I just thought he was very disjointed. Like, he did not really get into the flow of the game like he usually does. Right. It reminded me of a lot of his like first couple games when he first got here and he was, you know, kind of getting used to everybody. It just seemed like he wasn't part of the flow at all. He was only 70% passing. He did have three interceptions, which was second on the team. He did have, you know, his typical, I believe 10 ball recoveries, which was second on the team. You know, he did the things that he's used to doing, but I do think he wasn't quite as clean, wasn't quite as sharp as he normally would be, and frankly, wasn't as sharp as we need him to be. I gave him a 5.5.
Yeah, your description about his first couple of games and just feeling disjointed, out of sorts, just not connected with the rest of the team, I think that's a great shot. That's a great, great shout. That's a great description, I think, of his game. So we'll move on and we'll finish the midfield with Santi Arias, a guy, again, who I'm looking forward to seeing this season. I think he's going to bring a special something to that right side that we've been lacking. You've kind of alluded to it with a couple of these players. I don't know, and I guess time will tell on the Hagelin Arias pairing, right? There, we make a lot about the sort of the triangle of Barrial, Moreno, and Mascaro, and the ability of them to work together, and Mascaro and Barrial in particular, you know, one can cover for the other or make up for the other one. With Santi and Nick, I feel like we've got, I don't want to say two of the same players because they are not the same player, but I feel like Arias is probably more the defender, but then Nick is a defender. Like, they just don't complement each other well, maybe, is what I'm saying. What about, like, and I thought in this game, he wasn't terrible, but I just felt like there was either something holding him back or just something wasn't clicking to either get him space or allow him to be effective. And defensively, again, not out of sorts, but certainly not as positioned as well as he should be. Maybe that's because, you know, we talked about these downstream causes and what that does to the players behind the ball when maybe that front line isn't doing what they need to be defensively. So I've rambled a lot about Arias. I'll let you talk about him now.
Yeah. You know, I do think it was partly like it did seem like Haglund and he were not on the same page, especially when they pressed us. I mean, I will say, like, I think teams up to this point have really missed the boat on how to beat us. I think, like, this style of you know, staying on the front foot against us is the way. I think we have the talent to eventually break down just about any defense, but I do think that our back line has guys that really don't know how to handle pressure. The Haglund, Miazga, and Yersin are all guys that I think Yersin showed out a lot better than the other two. But I think both of those, Miazga and Haglund, both really struggled to be effective passing the ball out of the back. Like Miazga was only like 5 of 10 on short passing. Mm-hmm. And you know, Haglund was, you know, 50% pretty much across the board. So like I thought Santi, once he got forward, I thought he looked good, but I do think that the communication wasn't great between him and Haglund getting back. I think there were times when Santi kind of got crossed up a little bit. He absolutely got turned around on that Stroud, save that Celentano made but again, you know, he was kind of left to defend for himself on that one, but you know, he took a very poor challenge on the Nelson on Nelson leading up to that second goal. He had a chance on goal that he kind of whiffed on that volleyed shot that Barrial crossed to him. Again, it was a pretty hard play, so you know, I can't blame him too much, but it was one of our better opportunities on the night. He was slow to close down Stroud on the Hebert goal. He did have a really nice ball to Baji, got the hockey assist on our goal. To kind of loop back around and talk about how I thought he was one of our best players, I thought he was by far our best player getting the ball forward. He led mm-hmm. the team in progressive passing distance, and he also had 5 of our 10 progressive carries on the team. So he was by far our leader in that statistic. And he was second on the team with progressive passes with 9. I did think he was one of our best players, but he did have problems defensively. So I ended up giving him a 4.5.
So amongst all of that, one of the takeaways, one of the things that popped into my head is this. What unlocks Barrial is that Mascaro is behind and can cover him. What's going right. to unlock Santi is if we add a center back that is, I mean, I hate to say it this way, right? Because everybody loves Haglund, but we got to be honest here. We need to upgrade that position. And until we upgrade that position, it's really going to be matchup dependent, right? Not every team can press the way St. Louis does. It's the way they're built. It's the way they built that club to be. Not everybody can do it and do it as effectively as them. You got to tip your cap to them for what they've been able to do this early on in their MLS life, I suppose. But until we upgrade that center back position over Haglund, it's going to be tough when teams are able to pressure, particularly that side of the field. You know, again, Lucho being out probably has a little bit to right. do with that too. But at the same time, you just don't have that confidence in behind that, you know, Santi can then sort of play free, because you're right. He was very good offensively when he could go up, but then you're nervous when that happens. If we lose the ball, like, we're really exposed because it's just Nick back there. So
right.
anyway,
and like I just noticed that, you know, our front three in this game really did not get back like Lucho or Brenner would.
No, not at all.
And give those guys an outlet where, you know, we were a little overloaded. Basically force an open player, flood a zone, so to speak. So, like, I do think that a lot of our problems offensively started with that first pass where we were not bailing our guys out. Like we do, and one thing Noonan has been very good about is setting us up so that, you know, a guy like Haglund, who's not a great passer under pressure, so that he has an outlet to go to. And, right. And there was just too many times where our guys were feeling the heat and they didn't know where the ball was supposed to go. And I do think, like, there were just a lot of ways where, you know, Lucho's hand was missing. And so, yeah, I put these problems in the back of the field in our own defensive third, I feel like are just as much problems with us missing Lucho and Brenner as our problems in the attacking third.
Yep. No, I agree 100% with that. And we'll move to that front line. For all intents and purposes, Noonan came out in a 3-4-3. I think having to try to make up for some of that offensive loss, knowing that you're not going to have Brenner playing and not going to have Lucho. Now, it was sort of pegged that Santos was going to be the man maybe to drop in and receive the ball, not necessarily playing the 10 as much as kind of a false 9 and being more of a facilitator. It didn't quite work out well, and there was a switch at halftime as a result. So you'd probably have to look at that and say Noonan got it a little bit wrong. But before we get into that front line, I do want to just kind of agree with the comment that you made. If this doesn't show people how much defense or how important both Lucho and Brenner are to what we do defensively, this did, because you take those two out and you replace them with Sergio and with Kimi, they don't put the defensive effort in the same way. Vasquez is always going to be that target guy. You know, that's his role. He played his role in this game, and we'll talk about how effectively he did it in a minute. But those guys did not pick up the slack defensively for both Brenner and Lucho being out. Now, that being said, let's move into that front three. And I'm going to let you tell me where you want to go first.
I'm going to start with Kimi.
Okay. So he gets his first start, a player that probably we had said, you know, it'd be interesting to get him some first team minutes. He's been tearing it up with the twos, is going obviously to the U-20s. So, yep, go ahead and give us your thoughts on him.
I thought it was a pretty mediocre game from him. I understood why both Haglund and he were taken off at halftime. Now, not to say that Kimi did anything glaringly bad. I thought he was sharp passing. He actually was 100% passing. He was 11 of 11. But I do think that he was a little bit like he chased the game a little too much. He was trying to be Brenner, but he was not nearly as effective at forcing them into making mistakes. There's a lot of running, but not a whole lot of results with what he did defensively. And, you know, I really thought he also had a hard time. He did have a few good touches, but I thought in general they're just, you know, there wasn't enough of that. Like we said, like Vasquez playing the role that he plays, he's always going to have not a lot of touches. But Brenner, you know, when we're doing well, you know, he's a guy that you know, he's getting 40, 50 touches in a game. And you see a lot of them. And there just wasn't, you know, I just didn't have my eyes on Kimi all that often, being disruptive and also helping out in the attack in the middle third of the field. And so I thought it was decent. I'm sure it was everything that Pat Noonan probably expected out of him, but I don't think he did a whole lot to help us offensively or defensively. I gave him a 5.0.
Yeah, I thought it was a good spot to start him in. I think you kind of got the feeling that this game might be a little open just because of the way St. Louis pressed. So you were going to maybe have opportunities to get Kimi out in space, maybe one-on-one. And he is a fearless dribbler. He will take players on 1v1 and he will force the action. Just didn't really get the involvement that you wanted. And again, I like the shout about just kind of didn't let the game come to him, sort of tried to force himself into the action a lot of times. And, mm-hmm. You know, again, he's young, he's learning. It's valuable minutes. You know, his contribution probably wasn't going to win or lose this game, especially with the outcome being what it is. So right. Let's move to
actually one more thing I wanted to say on him, kind of to your point, was there was like one time where he tried to, it was off a corner kick, and you know, he was kind of at the top corner of the box, and the ball guy came all the way out to him, and he tried to make a move, and he lost it, and that was. And that was basically what started the Stroud break, where Stroud ended up putting it right on Roman. And, you know, it is something that happens 90 yards down the field that ends up biting you at the other end of the field. When you're in a corner, you have so many players up, there just isn't a lot of people to get back defensively. And then that's when you end up having a guy like Arias on an island and everybody else is running a full sprint and they can't get back.
Right. Well, you know, those decisions downstream or upstream in that instance cost you downstream, and it's situational awareness. It's knowing, you know, what position your team is in and where your defenders are. But again, he's young. It'll come with time. So let's move to the middle. Sergio Santos got another goal, albeit kind of a consolation, if you will call it that. But so he was maybe the lone offensive bright spot. Maybe, I guess you can talk about him.
I mean, he did get the goal, I will say. I did not think, I kind of put him a little bit in the Miazga camp as far as people that kind of lost their head a little bit.
Lost his head, big time.
He was also one of seven in the air on aerial duels. So, you know, he really didn't help us out a lot there. He did have one really good play, like I mentioned before, where Barrial, you know, hit him with like a 60-yard rope, and he was able to put a volley toward the goal, just missed it wide. He was, I thought, probably our most dangerous-looking attacker from beginning to end of the game. But, yeah, there were just too many times where I thought he kind of took us out of the game with – Yeah, you know, he just needed to, you know, his point was made. You don't have to get a yellow for dissent. You know, I do agree that Vasquez should have, you know, that should have been called a foul. There were times where you know, they could have easily gotten yellows and they didn't. And I understand the frustration, but I do think he probably crossed the line a little bit too much. And just as a team, we kind of lost our way. And he, you know, I do see him as kind of a leader and somebody that needs to take a step back and calm everybody down. So despite scoring the goal, I gave him a 5.5.
That's a fair criticism. Again, you have to have cool heads when you're out there. And when you've got the guy anchoring your back line and the guy anchoring your front line, more concerned bitching about the ref on call. Like, the call wasn't made. It's not going to change.
Right.
So, you know, it is frustrating. I've been there. I've been out on the field when it happens. It's easy for it to snowball and let your emotions get the best of you. But this is where the mentality of the team gets called into question, right? Like, we've proven that we can see games out. Have we proven that we can keep our heads in it when things aren't going our way? I guess the jury is out on that.
Right.
Speaking of a player that the jury is out on, Adam, I am in full on panic mode with Brandon Vasquez. I think this is indicative of who he is. He's coming back to earth, maybe coming back to the back of his baseball card, so to speak. I don't know if he's pressing because of contract, he's got his contract. Some people have said, well, he's married now. His focus is different. You know, he's got maybe other clubs asking about him. He had sort of the flirtation last year with Liga MX, and now he's getting called into the U.S. men's national team and obviously wanting to make his mark there. But on the field right now with the orange and blue, he is a shell. And I thought he was generally like a shell of himself in this game. What did you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I kind of tend to chalk it up to the European talk, especially. I think that kind of, that's a pretty big thing.
Big distraction.
Right. A big distraction. I mean, it's one thing for Brenner to go to Europe. That is a distraction for him too. But you know, we're talking about Vasquez is probably going to make, you know, 5 to 10 times as much money immediately if he goes to some place in this summer window. And so, you know, all of a sudden you're paying, you know, if his people are in talks with these teams in Europe, I'm sure they're throwing around some pretty big numbers, and that can be distracting. And I do agree, though. Like, I don't think he is a shell of the player he was last year. He does not have the focus. He does not imprint his style on the game like he was last year. I mean, there were so many times last year where, you know, you just see him absolutely going after it defensively late in games. You see a lot less of that this year. Like, I just don't think he has quite the same. Like he needs that fire in order to perform, and you know, it just seems like he's kind of being the rag doll a little bit. Like we're passing it to him, and he's getting fouled a lot or getting bumped around a lot, and he's not like fighting back. He doesn't have that edge that he had a lot last year, and so, you know, it's definitely affected his game, though. He absolutely missed Stroud on the first goal 3 minutes in. Like it's hard to put that on anybody but him. Like that was definitely his man, and Stroud had an open look at goal that he did not make a mistake on, and he did not close that down at all. He tried to, you know, there's a lot of times where he would try to make a pass to Kimi, or he would try to, you know, try these little flick-ons, and they just, I mean, they were good ideas, but they just weren't sharp. And you know, there were a lot of times last year, I mean, he did get assists last year in very similar situations, and those same plays just aren't coming off for him like they were last year. Also, a few instances where I thought he was trying to be a little too cute, maybe trying to take a little extra dribble, or, you know, doing a layoff pass when he doesn't.
He's not a cute player, right?
Exactly.
Like that's not who he is.
Exactly. Like it's like he's trying to show skills that are not really in his wheelhouse, and I think that that's kind of affecting his game too. But all in all, yeah, like his passing was in the mid 60s. He was not particularly sharp. He was, you know, winning 50% of his headers. I think he was like 55% of his headers. But you know, good but not great. I think he's had worse games this year, but this was not a good game. I gave him a 4.5.
I'm sorry, what was it again?
Sorry, a 4.5.
4.5. Yeah, he comes back from men's national camp. He's got two games for me. He's got two games to wake the hell up is I guess the only way to say it. And, you know, if he's playing tentative, if his thoughts are somewhere else, if he's trying to be overly impressive, those are recipes for disaster. You can't go out there and not be 100% focused. You can't go out there, and I don't want to say play scared, so I'll say play tentative, play not to get hurt, try to do too much. You know, he's got to play within himself, and right now he is not, and it's hurting us. Like it hurt us in this game because we couldn't relieve the pressure, because every time it went to him, and again, he's never had the best touch. So, right. You know, when you're trying to play to a hold up striker and it bounces off of them like they're a brick wall, it's going to be tough to maintain possession and get anything going. And that happened too many times in this game, and has happened too many times, quite frankly, this season. I hope nothing more than he gets it together, that he clears his head. He has a successful little mini camp for this U.S. men's national team call-up, comes back ready to go against Portland, because Brenner's going to be, I mean, I don't know how many games he has left with us, right? How many games he's actually going to play between now and the time that he leaves. I'm pretty sure he's not going to play against Portland, especially if he's going to fly to Italy this week to sign his contract. So we need Brandon Vasquez to be Brandon Vasquez, whether he leaves in the summer or not. We need him now.
Right.
All right. Let's go ahead and recap the starters from this 5-1 defeat. So Roman lets up 5, but gets a 4. So, well, wait, that's one less than the goals that he gave up. That's still not good. Yersin Mascara was your man of the match with a 7-0. Miazga with a disappointing 4.5. And Hags with an even more disappointing 2.0. Midfield across was very mediocre as well. Barrial, 6.5. Moreno with a 6. Obi with a 5.5. And Arias with a 4.5. And more mediocrity across the front. Kimi with a 5, albeit in 45 minutes of work. Sergio Santos with a 5.5. And Vasquez finished it off with a 4.5. Again, add it all up, 5-1 defeat. Let's talk about a couple of subs because there was a formation change. You had Marco Angulo come on at halftime, and you had Dom Baggi come in. So you want to talk about those players?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, especially Baggi, but I'll start with Angulo. I thought Angulo did help us when he came in. I thought especially with the helping us get the ball upfield, I thought that we just needed his presence a little bit more, kind of in that Kubo role where he was able to turn and take it up the field a lot more. So I do think that he helped us in that respect. He did only have 23 touches, though, but he did also have a tackle and interception. He wasn't super involved in the game is what I'm trying to say, but I thought he was fairly decent. I gave him a 5.5. But Baggi, I thought, was actually one of our best players. I'd even kind of thought about making him man of the match because I thought that he was immediately one of our best players when he came in. He actually was tied for the team lead with 5 shot creating actions, including getting the assist on the goal. So, you know, I thought he was definitely dangerous, and I thought that he probably earned a little more playing time, honestly. Mm-hmm. So I think in the battle between minutes between Kimi and Baggi, I think Baggi definitely won that round. I gave him a 6.5.
And you'd like to say that's expected out of Dom. In the podcast leading up to this, Nate, when we had Laurel on, Nate said something, you know, don't mess with what you know. And, you know, typically we come out with this 3-4-1-2. I would say if you asked Noonan, if he was going to be honest and had to do it all over again, he probably would have rolled Angulo out to start. Having that player of that skill set in that position is definitely what we needed, especially in the beginning of this game, just to temper it down and be able to break them down. Whether or not we would have been able to make anything out of it offensively, you know, and again, you're losing Brenner and Lucho, so you're trying to replace some of the offensive firepower that you're losing by going with a Santos in that spot instead of Angulo. But I think if he had to do it all again, and I think when Portland rolls around, I think you're probably going to see back to that 3-4-1-2 with Angulo in that role. Whether it's his natural position or not, he's going to have to play it either until Lucho or Kubo come back to be able to sort of slide in there. Hopefully it's Lucho sooner than later.
Yeah.
So I think if you were to ask Pat, he would say that. So sorry, I had to take a breath there. I was talking for a long time, but yep. So again, I don't think it was as bad as the scoreline, but I also think that there are still some glaring holes in this team. All that being said, this team is still sitting in first place in the East. Well, second on goal differential, still sitting on 17 points, tied with New England. You know, has a little cushion on the teams behind him in Atlanta and Columbus. A wounded Portland coming in, although one that came back and just absolutely throttled Seattle in the second half. But rivalry match on their home turf, a goal that really just woke up that crowd and woke up that team. And then they go to rout the Sounders in the second half. So it's going to be an interesting test come Saturday night at TQL. I think to really check the mentality of this team, there's this, you know, belief or underlying tone out there that we can't get it done without Lucho and that this team struggles without Lucho. And I think that, you know, Noonan has a lot to show this week to prove to the guys that they can get it done without him. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I don't know if anybody has helped his stock in the negative by not playing as much as Lucho has. I believe we're giving up one goal every like 28 minutes without Lucho on the field and one goal every 546 minutes with Lucho on the field. So it's a pretty massive difference. Reminds me of like video games between like scores when I play the game on Madden and scores when I simulate the game on Madden. Like it's a pretty huge difference. I do think Angulo probably proved that, you know, I think after the Chicago game, maybe we wanted to try something a little different than having Angulo run up there. But I think we kind of
you don't have any other choice.
Yeah, I think we proved also that we need that was just not enough defenders on the front line to help bail out the guys further back. Like you just have issues with, you know, I was going to say this when I saw the lineup and you know, when they put it out in the 3-4-3, like, well, we're going to see actually what the back line can do tonight, because they're not going to have all the help that they've had in the past, just because I know that Santos, I mean, Santos can give it to you for 20 minutes, but he can't give it to you for a whole game. And, mm-hmm. and same's true. Like Kimi is, you know, I think the world of Kimi. I think he'll be a great player someday. I don't have any problems with playing him, but I do think that he is not going to, like, to say
he's a defensive liability.
Right. To say that Kimi can do the things that Brenner do is just naive. Like, one guy is being sold in like a few weeks for $10 million. And Kimi, I mean, he might move this summer, but it's not going to be for $10 million. So, you know, long story short, like, I just think that we need to, I think we need to cover for Lucho defensively before we need to worry about covering for Lucho offensively.
Yeah. And we're going to be, you know, we're going to be without both Lucho and Brenner again this weekend. So it's an opportunity for Noonan to make adjustments, to maybe learn something, take something from this St. Louis match and apply it to Portland. Well, after that match is done, we will be back to recap it all, hopefully in better spirits, hopefully with something more pleasant to talk about. The Orange and Blue are undefeated at TQL, so looking to stay, you know, let's maximize it and get the 3 points at home. That's the key to success. So that's what we're going to try and do on Saturday. So for Grade A, we're going to wrap it up. I am Adam Wygand. Thanks for listening, and a big old hearty Prost.
And I'm Adam Kuhn. Love and honor.
I don't even know how I'm going to intro this shit show, to be honest with you. All right, you ready to go? We're not going to mess around beforehand.
All right.
I think we should just get right to it.
Yeah, you don't even want to do funny stuff after the thing. Just
what do you want? Yeah, let's do something funny to take our mind off of what we're about to talk about. What do you got that's funny? Tell me something funny.
Man, I don't know. You know, I never get to watch the games live. Like, I always work on Saturday nights, you know, driving Uber and stuff like that. I mean, I saw the Seattle game in person, but yeah, road games, I almost never see them until later. But like, I just decided, I'll just stay home on Saturday.
Oh, God,
night.
What a life choice that was.
Yeah, and then there's the weather delay, and like, I went outside and I built a fire. Like, we had,
gearing up for it.
It was really nice, you know. Had a few drinks, you know. Sat back there with my son, and my dog was sitting right by my side, and I was petting her head.
A Norman Rockwell moment.
It really was a Norman Rockwell night up until the... I was like, well, it's about time for kickoff. I guess I'll go in. So I go in and, like, I, you know, turn on the game in, like, the minute and 30th second, and, like, that was a shitty foul. Oh, they scored. Oh.
Yeah. Oh, and the worst part was, like, you're just dragging yourself through the night to stay up. It's like, okay, 8:30. All right, it's going to be about 9:30. Oh, now it's 10:30. Oh, okay, 10:59 kickoff. Well, we'll be the, like, we'll start after all the West Coast games. So, yeah, it was, and then to stay up that late and, yeah, for it to fall apart that quick, you're just like, are you kidding? Like, yep. And now I'm obligated to watch the second half because,
well, right.
What the hell is the difference? Why go to sleep?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you know, it's like, well, I mean, I don't usually go to bed until 2 or 3 on a Saturday anyway. So I was kind of,
yeah,
it was kind of a last second thing just to not drive. And I was like, oh, you know, So I was kind of geared up for staying up late, but yeah, that was not how that was not the nightcap I wanted. It was definitely went downhill fast.
Yes, the boys had different plans.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's relive it all. What do you say?
All right, let's do it.
All right. I don't even know how to start this, to be honest with you. I'm such a loss. Hold on.